Is America one nation under God still? And does it matter? We're going to talk about that right now on this portion of Vocal Point with Bill Federer, who is a best-selling author. He maintains the website AmericanMinute.com. He's also a highly sought-after speaker. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And, Bill, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Jerry.
Well, first of all, some people would even question the idea of America as being one nation under God ever. But my question was, is America one nation under God still, and does it matter? So let's deal with the past. Was America ever one nation under God? Let's start there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, one of the things I did was read through every charter of every colony, and they're all Christian. They all acknowledge God. Matter of fact, they're different denominations of Christian. So Virginia was Anglican, Massachusetts was Puritan, Rhode Island was Baptist, New York was Dutch Reformed, Delaware, New Jersey, Swedish Lutheran. You get the picture. And then they allowed in Catholics. And I read through every state constitution. 9 of the original 13 state constitutions not only acknowledged God, they required office holders to be Protestant Christians. And then after the Irish potato famine, they changed to just being plain Christians. And then there's a persecution of Jews in Bavaria, middle 1800s. The states changed their constitutions to let a Jew or a Christian hold office. And then in the late 1800s, many of the states, after they got rid of slavery, rewrote their constitution to say all you had to do was believe in God. And then it was really in 1947 with the Everson case that you had Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black say that ethical culture was a religion. And then the Supreme Court said secular humanism was a religion. And even a case in 2005, Kaufman versus McCautry, where the Supreme Court Justice says atheism is a religion. And so that religions do not have to have a supreme being. And so now, to not prefer one religion over another, they kick God out. But you can trace how it started with a definite Christian founding, but it's gotten away from it. One of the other things I did is I read through all the speeches of all the presidents and found out that they all mentioned God in their inaugural addresses. Mm-hmm. They had days of thanksgiving to God, days of prayer to God, days of fasting to God. Then I read through all kinds of different court documents where they would uphold Christian morality and so forth. Now, and then you look at the population. So you get I was reading where the CIA.gov has a website and it has a world fact book. So you can click on it and it has all statistics about countries around the world. It has Japan is like, 80% Buddhist and India is, a large percent Hindu and then Pakistan's like, 90-some-odd% Muslim. And then Saudi Arabia is 100% Muslim. That's because you're not allowed to be anything else. But you list you click on the United States. And I've been doing this for decades. And so in the 1990s, when you click on the United States, it said that the population was 94% Christian, about 25% Protestant, 16% Baptist, and then, the Presbyterian and Lutheran, and it goes down from there. But as the years go on, it would say, and it would draw a lot of their statistics from the Pew Forum, P-E-W, in their religious landscape survey. But today it's gone down to 65% Christian. Wow, what a drop just since I've been watching this over the last 20 years. So, and then we know the founders were because they list the churches. They literally would say, okay, there's 7 synagogues in America, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, in the Truro synagogue in Rhode Island. And then it would list the Lutheran churches and the Catholic churches. Catholics were only allowed in 3 colonies originally, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and a little bit New York. And they were not allowed even until after the 1790s with the Bill of Rights that many states changed to allow Catholics to hold office.
Well, wait a second. Georgetown dates to about 1790-something. So that's in the, isn't that in the greater D.C. area? Of course, I guess D.C. wasn't a city until about 1800. So,
right. Well, that was Maryland, and Maryland was founded by Catholics.
Oh, okay. So I see. So that's part of Maryland.
John Carroll founded it. John Carroll was the first Catholic bishop in America, and he founded Georgetown University. And it was his cousin, Charles Carroll, that signed the Declaration. And another cousin that actually sold the land that the U.S. Capitol is built on.
Oh, wow.
So it used to be a Catholic farm in Maryland that the U.S. Capitol is built on.
Wow, that's fascinating.
I give a little word picture. So it was Christians that allowed others in, and now everybody's tolerated except the Christians. So imagine looking out your front window and there's a street person, and you have, you know, compassion. You bring him in the house, you give him a meal, you let him sleep on the couch, you wake up in the morning, and there's two street people. He let his friend in. And you're like, okay, I'm late for work, and you rush off to work. You come back, there's a half a dozen of them, and they're like helping themselves to the icebox, and you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm tired, I'm just going to go to bed. You wake up, and there's, you know, two dozen, and you're late for work. You come back, your house is packed, and you're like squeezing through the crowd, and they look at you and say, who is this guy? We don't recognize this guy, and they shove you out on the front lawn. And you're looking back at your house saying, what just happened? That's what happened in America. You had first the Pilgrims and Puritans coming over, and then other Protestants came over, and then Catholics came over, and then they opened it up and they allowed Jews to come in, and then they let anybody that believed in God, and finally they let in the atheists and the fundamental Islamists, and the last ones in are kicking the first ones out. So everybody's tolerated in America except the Christians that founded the country.
So let me ask you this. Is America one nation under God now? I mean, still? I mean, in other words, technically, I mean, somebody might say, oh, well, you know, of course not. But isn't it true that the foundation itself, you know, the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution, the Declaration says our rights come from God. And what God has given us, you know, man cannot take away. You know, until America were to somehow be jettisoned from the Declaration of Independence, which is our birth certificate, then in one sense we'll always be one nation under God, in my view. But let me hear you wax eloquent.
Yeah, well, we're sort of on life support right now. We talk about the body politic. Well, if you think of it as a body, we've got a whole lot of autoimmune disease. What's an autoimmune disease? That's where a body, the immune system, attacks itself. And so we have critical race theory. Where, what's that? That's having the body break into different groups to attack itself. It's at a critical place. I do want to highlight the fact when we say one nation under God, we think, oh, this is a nice little acknowledgement. It's more than that. It goes back to ancient Israel, that first 400 years out of Egypt before they got King Saul. It's the first instance in recorded history of a nation with millions of people and no king. And it worked because every citizen was taught the law. And the Levite priests were the ones that taught them the law. But what motivated you to follow the law? Well, ancient Israel introduced into the world for all times the concept that there is a God who is watching everyone. He wants you to be fair, and he's going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal. There are no police around anywhere. You know you can get away with it. And then you stop and think, well, God is watching me. He wants me to be fair. He's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country really believes this, you can maintain complete order with no police. Maximum liberty. Women can go anywhere without fear. But if you get rid of this God and you stop teaching the Ten Commandments and the law, then people, all they have left is their raw human passion. And that's what Plato says. He says that a democracy will work as long as the people have virtue. But he goes, people will only have virtue as long as it's the end thing to be virtuous. He says when the prevailing culture stops emphasizing virtue, then they give into their selfish passions. It turns into lawlessness. And then everybody panics, and they say, we want someone to come along and restore order. And that's when you have some governor that comes along, and he says, I can restore order. I just need some emergency powers. I was just out in California, and I was in Minnesota, and you see these different states where the governor comes in and says, hey, I can take care of these problems. I just need some emergency power. Once they get it, all bets are off. It's very rare to have a governor that is willing to say, we're not going to let the government usurp all these powers, and thank God for a few of them, and one's right here in Florida. But it's this idea that we are a country founded on the people having their individual responsibility to a God who is not a respecter of persons. And when we teach the kids in schools, there's no more God. There's no more right and wrong. You don't even know if you're a boy or a girl anymore. There's no borders. There's no guidelines. It's total lawlessness. You shove these kids out on the street. And what do they have? They have their passions. You have something they want. They're going to go ahead and knock you over and take your stuff and rob and steal. And so our educational system is preparing the country for lawlessness. And now we have critical race theory going through the military, pushing out anybody with Christian moral values. And all you're going to have left is an enforcement arm of somebody that would want to usurp power and be a dictator. I liken the illustration to first 300 years of Christianity, 10 major persecutions. The last one is Diocletian. It's the worst. And let's look at it close. Diocletian had lost some battles with Persia, and he asked his generals why. And the general said, well, Emperor, you've neglected having the army worship the Roman gods. So Diocletian says, okay, army, everybody worship the Roman gods. Well, this is the 3rd century, so there's a lot of Christians by now. They cannot worship the Roman gods. They are purged out of the military. Once the Christians are out of the military, Diocletian decides to use the military to force the entire Roman Empire to return to worshiping the Roman gods.
Wow.
And he starts a systematic persecution going province by province and tearing down churches, arresting pastors, cutting out their tongues, boiling them alive. And it went on for 10 years. And so it's a really dangerous thing when you have a purging of the military of Christians.
Now, I want to add something to this anecdote you just told us. After Diocletian died, God raised up a professing Christian to be Caesar, Constantine, and he allowed the Christians to worship freely. But furthermore, Diocletian's grave, his tomb, ended up becoming later on, centuries later, the foundation or the cornerstone, rather, of a cathedral or a Christian church that was built in what used to be the country of Yugoslavia. And my parents actually worshipped in that church, and I was talking about this with my dad, and we were talking about Diocletian. I said, do you know who Diocletian was? And he said, no, I don't know, I guess some Christian saint way back when. I said, no, you were worshiping over Diocletian's body, which is so interesting. It's like Diocletian said to the Christians, all right, you worship Jesus over my dead body. And then God says, all right.
You know, another interesting thing with Diocletian is the scribes and scholars would date things according to the reign of kings.
Now we have one minute left, just so you know, 1 minute. Okay.
And so they date things according to kings, like in the Bible, it says in the 14th year of the reign of King Tiberius Caesar. And so it's in the 5th century, and they were still dating things according to Anno Diocletiani. And a monk named Dionysus Exiguus decides that he's going to count back to the birth of Jesus. And in the margin, he puts Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord's reign. And anyway, over the centuries, the scribes began to use that as the major dating. And so today, the whole entire world dates back not to Anno Diocletiani, but to the Anno Domini, in the year of Christ's reign, Jesus' birth.
That is such a great point. Bill, you're the best. AmericanMinute.com. There's still 30 seconds if you want to close. Does it matter that we're one nation under God?
Oh, well, yeah, it does, definitely. And I think that, you know, when you look at history, what are the stories that we like the best? It's Moses standing up to Pharaoh. It's Gideon standing up to 100,000 Midianites. It's David standing up to Goliath. In other words, God seems to like to wait until things look hopeless. And then he raises up little nobodies who are small in their own eyes, but big in faith and courage. And when the enemy comes in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord raises up a standard against it. And it's almost like to the same intensity. So the same intensity that there's evil manifesting, God is going to raise up courageous leaders with that same good Holy Spirit intensity. And so I think we're being set up for a great showdown, but we've read the end of the book and we win.
All right, Bill Federer, thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you.